You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
Whoa, wait a minute, huh? Hold up, what? Oh, okay. Did we just lose the f***ing Canucks?
You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Here's a chance going to the goal, stay in front. They score!
Call an ambulance! Call an ambulance! But not for me.
High slot, Pedersen. Left circle, Miller. Shoots. Stopped by Soros. Rebound. Off the outside of the net. The Besser scores.
If Vancouver wins in overtime, Jason Brough promised he was going to buy everyone a beer.
Zadorov behind the net for Garland in front. Lindholm scores! Elias Lindholm wins it for the Canucks.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Monday. I sound terrible. It's Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. What a day. What a night, Jason. Good morning.
Good morning. Did he say buy a beer or buy a deer?
Yeah. Either way, I didn't buy anything. A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you.
Hello, hello.
And as if we didn't have enough on the ledger already, we got an intern in the house. Intern Zach, good morning to you.
And good morning right back.
Halford and Brough in the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintech. So that was a lot of fun yesterday. Maybe the most improbable come-from-behind victory that I have ever witnessed in my days as a Canucks fan. That was just the third time in franchise history that the Canucks scored an equalizing goal in the last 10 seconds of the third period of a playoff game. So that doesn't happen very often. It also doesn't happen with your third goalie in the first four games of a series. Nothing makes sense. Everything has gone crazy.
Do they have a stat for whether or not a guy missed an open, empty netter?
They did not.
Oh, okay.
But that also happened yesterday.
Right. Okay.
For those that are wondering,
do you think Colton Sissons woke up this morning and he was like, oh, well, it's a new day. And then he had the memory of hitting the post. He was like, God damn it.
Ah, crap. I should have scored that. For those that don't know, we had a big party yesterday at the Hollywood Theater.
It sounds like it.
I had a real good time at that party. If you were to describe how I'm feeling right now, it's rough but worth it. Four words that sum up everything. And that really sums up yesterday. It was rough, but man, was it worth it. We got a lot to get into on the show today. We have a big show ahead on a Monday. Guest list begins at 6:30. David Amber's going to join us, host of Hockey Night Canada, Sportsnet, NHL. He put us on the broadcast yesterday. So for those that missed it, an unbelievable, impeccable, like, turn of events. The Canucks staged this crazy comeback. We captured it on video at the Hollywood. It makes the broadcast. Mm-hmm. There was that real meta moment where we were in the Hollywood Theater watching Hockey Night in Canada, and then we were on Hockey Night in Canada.
I like, did David Amber say there was 1,000+ there?
Yeah.
He was like, he was juicing the numbers like it was like Trump's inauguration or something like that. It was unbelievable.
I may have added a couple zeros.
We're like, yes, David, there was 1,000 people.
I think there was 4,000 there. Capacity is 500 or
something. Got my dad on the TV and everyone thought he was Cheech. I got like 5 texts. Cheech. Oh, I'm like, it's not Cheech.
He does have a killer stash.
Yeah.
So David Amber's going to join us at 6:30 to talk about yesterday's game. 7 o'clock, we will get the Pred side of things. In all of this madness and hysteria, Laddie, very astutely, and Andy brought it up this morning. They're like, what do you think Nashville's feeling right now? I'm like, probably pretty sad. So we'll talk to Adam Vingan from Nashville. He's covering this series for Sportsnet.ca about the Pred side of things. That's got to be the most deflating. I mean, I know that they lost the Stanley Cup final, but that's got to be the most deflating loss that a lot of those Preds fans have experienced live in person in the playoffs. So we'll talk to Adam at 7 o'clock. 8 o'clock, Kevin Woodley, NHL.com, In Goal Magazine. What a perfect time to have our regularly scheduled hit with Kev, because we don't know who's going to play next for the Vancouver Canucks in net. People have joked that it might be Tolopilo. I don't even think that's a joke anymore.
JD the Jerk texted in to the Dunbar Lumber text line. And he said, if the Canucks don't start Tolopilo in game five, they're absolute cowards. That's true. They should do it. Just be a weird flex.
Just the confidence.
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
And they win. Imagine the Preds.
Yeah, we want to get them some work, you know.
Guess what record you guys own now?
You get a win, you get a win, you get a win, and you get a win.
We've decided to alternate through four goalies the rest of the playoffs. Every game will be a different goalie.
Take that, Boston.
That's the meme. How can someone be so controversial yet so brave? That's it.
Try
right
to pre-scout
there.
That.
Yeah.
You don't know who's in net.
So working in reverse on the guest list, Woodley at 8, Vingan at 7, David Amber at 6:30. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. As mentioned, it was a Brock Besser hat trick. It went as Elias Lindholm in overtime. The Canucks somehow rallied for a 4-3 victory against Nashville, taking a stranglehold 3-1 in their series at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday afternoon.
So we'll get into all the discussion points that were raised by that game. But sometimes you look back on a game and you think, how in the heck did that happen? I'm not sure I have ever watched a Canucks game where that question is more appropriate. Like, seriously, how in the heavens did that happen? I know we all watched the game and we all know what happened, but let's go back a little. Let's just set the scene to where we were, which was not in a particularly good place, to where we are now, which is happy and hungover. Mm-hmm. Okay. Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. There were 3 minutes left, and the Canucks were down by 2 goals. But, let's be honest, it felt like they were down by 100. I tweeted out, like, it might as well be 1 million. The Canucks had no answers out there. None. They could barely dump the puck in. Actually, I think Nils Höglander failed to dump the puck in at one point. So they can't even dump the puck in, let alone get a shot on goal. The Predators were winning all the battles. And I remember I leaned over to Halford at one point, and I was like, first of all, sober up. Second of all, You really have to tip your cap to the way the Preds are just dominating this game. And I don't want to say that it felt like the Canucks had given up on the game, because I don't think they had, but it did feel like the Canucks had kind of come to terms with the fact that the series was going to be headed back to Vancouver for game five, and they were going to have to go back to the drawing board. They were going to have to regroup and find a better plan against these Nashville Predators. Offensively speaking, the Canucks just could not create anything. I actually have to wonder how many people in Vancouver turned the game off. I thought about leaving the Hollywood. I was like, I'm going to beat traffic and get out of here.
I saw a few people do that, and I was thinking in my head, like, man, I wonder if this will bite them in the butt.
I think a few people did leave our watch party, but if they did, they made a massive mistake, because with 3 minutes left, Laddie, we're going to need you here, because we're going to go through some highlights. With 3 minutes left, the Canucks had the goalie pulled, and a celebration, because they actually managed to get set up in the Nashville end. It was progress.
We clapped.
And then this happened.
Again to Besser. Right circle. Back to Hughes. Left side into the middle of the ice. Near circle. Miller down low. Lindholm scoops it across. Besser scores! Brock Besser at the side of the net. Scores his second of the game in tight. And the Canucks get a 6-on-5 goal to cut into the Nashville lead.
Okay. So, it was 3-2 at that point. And by the way, Brock Besser, second goal of the game. He just barely got that over UC Saros' skate. Did you notice that?
He got it over UC Saros' skate.
But he got it in. There was a glimmer of hope.
There was also a lot of time left on the clock. I remember that point.
Yep.
We were all sitting there, and I remember distinctly saying, okay, the pull was early. The pull was early and aggressive, but it worked.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's interesting. Now, again, just to kind of set the tone of where we were at, I think we were on the same page. I don't remember much.
Hell of a move by Tocchet too, man.
I just remember thinking, okay, something finally went right. That's all, and that was it. I'm like, maybe it'll only be this one instance, but they went early and aggressive with the pull. They kind of squeaked a goal in, and we're like, okay.
Yeah, if they could score once with the empty net, maybe they could score twice. Alas, I love that word, alas. That hope was kind of short-lived because a minute after Besser scored to make it 3-2, the Preds gained possession. They got a 2-on-1. It was also a 3-on-2. All Colton Sissons had to do was fire. A simple backhand into the open net. It looked like it was over. It looked like that crowd in Nashville was going to get to celebrate a win. It was done. And then this happened.
Hughes at his own line, poked it free. It comes to Sissons, left wing, into the Vancouver zone. Backhand, he hit the post, but it stayed out. And Hughes clears it all the way down. This is going to be icing against Vancouver.
What? He missed? He missed? Mm-hmm. Colton Sissons misses that? He missed it? So, everyone on the Nashville bench thought it was in. They all had their hands up, and some of them had turned to their teammates on the bench to hug them, and they missed that. It actually didn't go in. Okay, so you know that was lucky.
So now at this point, I'm thinking, okay, two things have gone right this period, and I'm like, we're building momentum here. Things are happening, and the Sissons thing is the kind of one where it's like you didn't do anything for that to break your way. He just didn't score on an open.
He just didn't score on an open.
Yeah. So at this point, you're talking about, okay, well, you earned the first bit of good luck, and the second bit of good luck was really just luck. So now I'm like,
pure
okay,
luck. Yeah.
Okay, maybe momentum's turned, but still, there's not a ton of optimism because time is ticking down like crazy.
Yeah, alas, time was starting to run out. There was a minute left, and then just 30 seconds. Oh, well. Well, you know, listen, the Canucks didn't deserve to win this game. Anyway, I guess they'll go back to Vancouver tied 2-2. It's, you know, it's still a best of three, and the Canucks will have home ice advantage. They still have a pretty good chance to win this series, and then this happened.
And the puck is in the left corner. Yoshi gets it free, clears it around far point. Hughes holds in, made a move around Nyquist, who fell. High slot, Pettersson, left circle, Miller, shoots, stopped by Soros, rebound, off the outside of the net, then Besser scores! Brock Besser on his own rebound, ties the game at three with 6.2 seconds left in the third period. Besser picks up the hat trick, and the Canucks come all the way back, down 3-1 with 3 minutes left. And this game is tied.
And you, sir, Brendan Batchelor, have my attention.
Yeah.
Just like that, we've gone from a wildly disappointing performance to the, just a few minutes ago, unthinkable possibility of the Canucks winning this game. Brock Besser with the hat trick. The crowd in Nashville was stunned. That play by Quinn Hughes to corral the bouncing puck along the boards and then beat Nyquist to get the Canucks reset. Incredible. Of course, there was still overtime, so the game wasn't won yet. I remember back in 2004, the Canucks tied the game late against the Calgary Flames in Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Cook.
Jovo in the box.
And I celebrated, and I was like, surely they're going to win this game now. The Calgary Flames are going to be absolutely devastated by that. And then Marty Zelina scored like a minute into overtime. I was like, oh, well, that Matt Cook goal was still a lot of fun in the moment. It would have been pretty cruel if the hockey gods let that happen again. Fortunately, we didn't have to wait long until this happened.
And Cole holds in right point again. Zadora behind the net for Garland in front. Lindholm scores! Lindholm wins it for the Canucks. 1:02 into overtime. He beats Juuse Saros from the slot. And Vancouver has a stranglehold on this series. They lead it 3-1. And they win it in Nashville 4-3.
I don't think that I've ever had a more dramatic, like, low to high in such a short period of time. Because it was the final 2 minutes and 49 seconds of regulation, and it was the first minute of overtime. All the action was crammed into, I mean, including the intermission, of course, but was crammed into that.
I had a problem even cheering because, like, my instinctive reflex was just shock. Yeah, I was just sort of, my hands were up in the air, but I was like, what just happened? Like, how did this happen?
I was more, to be honest, I celebrated the Besser equalizer more than the Lindholm winner, which sounds weird, but because the Besser equalizer was so late. So late and so improbable at that point. He scored with 8 seconds left. Like, it was done and dusted. That game was over. And in a lot, and I'm going to say this, justifiably over for the Canucks because they did not play well. And I was like, okay, valiant fight at the end. Like, if you want to look up what a smash and grab victory is in the sports dictionary, that was the dictionary definition of a smash and grab. They came in late.
The Canucks were actually all arrested after that game.
They should have been. There was larceny, theft, whatever. It was unreal. And, you know, on a personal note, to be like, when we decided to throw this the bash at the Hollywood, you can't. I was joking with Teresa and AJ from AJ's Pizza, who were selling pizza. It was great. And I said, the one rough thing about trying to schedule an event or do an event around a sports event is that you don't get to dictate how the party's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If the team that you're supporting loses 12-0, your party sucks. And you could have the best party on the planet, but...
And I'll be honest with you, I was starting to think the Hollywood was kind of like a cursed venue for us because we saw a bunch of disappointing Canadian performances at the World Cup. You and I are big England supporters. We were there for a couple of England games, including the game where Harry Kane missed that penalty against France, and I was depressed for about a month after that. And now we're back there again, and it's kind of like, oh, the Canucks are just playing awful
so
right
it's
now.
3-1 Nashville with 3 minutes left, and Bruff and I are low-key muttering to each other, like, we're never coming back. And then... Pandemonium, hysteria. Like, and now here's, I think, the important thing here. So we spent 15 minutes really trying to capture the moment and the essence and the vibe of the thing, but we should really, really discuss. And I think Rick Tocchet was the most sobering voice in all of this because he came in following that, probably the most emotional victory he's had as a coach, I would guess, as a head coach.
Sure.
And he came in, and you can tell by the tone of his voice and his words, he was like, that was great. But that we can't keep doing that. I mean, that was the message, plain and clear as day, is that we got away with one. And if you look at it, you're up 3-1 in this series. It's probably one of the more undeserved 3-1 series leads in recent NHL playoff history. Is that fair to say, everybody?
Sure.
They are not full value for a 3-1 series lead. They've got a 3-1 series lead, and some people will say it's not how many, it's how do you do it. But
and you can credit them for their resilience. Absolutely. I mean, in game one, you think about how they needed that, 12 seconds of magic in order to come back in the third period and win that game. And you can credit them for their resilience last night. Absolutely. But, you know, I think the coaching staff and the players to a T will be saying, it's awesome that we won.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to enjoy it. And, you know, Halford and I certainly aren't telling you to not enjoy it. I mean, we were listening to Halford's voice. He enjoyed it a lot.
Enjoyed it more than anybody.
And it was awesome. But I think, you know, part of this show is going to be looking ahead to game five and wondering how that's going to go now.
So let's throw to the head coach now, laddie. This is Rick Tocchet. Just acknowledging, I think he even drops a look in here, a Halford and Bruff-esque look, where he said, look, let's be real. We've just been hanging on.
They played really well the last two games, Nashville. Who's kidding who? We had some moments the last two games where we hung in there. But we definitely have to correct some things. I'm trying to be as honest as possible. And I'm happy for the guys. I'm happy. But we know we got to play better. And we got to get some guys going. You got to start to win some battles. I mean, you know, it's not about hitting. It's about actually holding on to pucks and winning battles. Because they play a style. If you can win some battles, you're going to get your looks. But if you're not, you're not going to get looks. And it's, I think that's really what it comes down to. We got to get some guys to understand that. You know, you got to start to really, you got to step up your game a little bit. You have to. If they're going to play like this again, they're coming in game five. They're not changing. I know Bruno. He's a hell of a coach. His game plan's there. They're sending three at us, and if we're not ready for it, you know. We might not be able to be as resilient the next game.
Now, hopefully, Tocchet is completely wrong about that, and the Preds are just psychologically destroyed.
Yeah.
They're just like, Colton, I can't believe you missed that. And he's like, I know, I retire. I'm so going to retire.
Hopefully, some lots of infighting going on.
How could you do that?
Someone's blaming Gus Nyquist for sliding too far.
Gus, what were you doing against Quinn Hughes there? I mean, you just like basically like got swallowed up by a whirlpool or something.
I don't know
where
Saros gets blamed.
Yeah. Forsberg, you were clearly cheating on the OT winner. Yeah.
But I think it's worth noting that the Preds do have a pretty good coach in Andrew Brunette. They have dominated a large stretch of this series, and they do have a guy like Ryan O'Reilly who can lean on his experience responding well to painful losses in the playoffs. Think back to the 2018 run that the Blues went on. They were down 3-2 to the Stars, and they won games 6 and 7. They had that really painful loss to San Jose where they got screwed on a bad call, and they responded with 3 straight wins. They lost game 6 of the Stanley Cup final at home to the Bruins. And then when everyone was expecting the Bruins to romp in game 7 at home, they blew the Bruins out of the water.
Yep.
If I'm the Preds, I might be psychologically destroyed. I hope I'm psychologically destroyed. I hope they're so psychologically destroyed. But in reality, what's probably going to happen is they're going to be disappointed about this, and then they're going to talk themselves into the chances of coming back and winning this series because they're going to say, hey, guys, we shouldn't be short on confidence here. The way the last two games have gone,
yeah,
we, for the most part, not only dominated the Canucks, but we bullied the Canucks. Mm-hmm. We outbattled them. We were knocking Quinn Hughes around. We were knocking Elias Pettersson over, and he had no fight back. Like, we still have a great opportunity in this series to go into Vancouver, win game 5, bring it back to Nashville. Our crowd's going to be like, all right, we'll give you one more chance.
Sure, yeah,
we'll give you one more chance, or we're going to cheer for you. If you win that game 6, then it's a game 7, and who knows what happens. They could easily go from absolutely destroyed after that game to like psychologically fired up mm-hmm. to come back in this series.
Yeah, I mean, all that's on the table because this Canucks team right now, I would classify them being in a somewhat fragile state. When you're playing your third goalie through the first 4 games of the opening round of the playoffs, you've gone through some stuff, right? You know, you look at those guys and he's like, he's been through some stuff. That's the Canucks right now. And amazingly, for all of us, pregame narratives that the goaltending situation has brought us, the goaltending actually hasn't been a huge factor on the ice. Like, Seelofs played very well yesterday.
Yeah.
He did not cost the team in the slightest.
First goal was a little bit dicey, but you know, whatever. You know?
I will
What's
get...
that?
Wasn't it deflected?
Was it ultimately? I thought
it was off the shaft of the stick.
At any rate.
Gives him a bit of a break.
Like Halford's right. Like, he's been really good.
Jankowski got credited with the tip.
Okay.
On that one. But point being, in a game where there were a million other things to talk about, like the goaltending, amazingly, the fact that they were on their third string netminder wasn't a huge talking point post-game because of all the other things that happened.
Props right? to Ian Clark.
Yeah, I mean, it is a remarkable story. I do want to play a little bit of the audio from Tocchet because at this point, it's funny. They're like, well, you know what? We're already this far down the depth chart. We feel good with whoever's going in net. All the confidence in the world in Artie Seelofs, who just wins games for this team. Rick Tocchet on his third string netminder, getting the win, a 4-3 overtime victory over Nashville in Nashville on Sunday.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when we decided not, you know, that we were going with Artie there, nobody was down. And we talked about him and Laftia last year, pressures. You know, I don't care. That's still a big stage there. Abbotsford, you know, he played some beat-gets from down there. He doesn't look nervous to me, like even before the game. Like, he doesn't say too much. Kind of, I actually leave him alone because, you know, sometimes goalies be left alone. But he just, I don't think the moment's too big for him. I like his demeanor. I think watching Casey and watching Demmer is something that he's watched the last couple of years from. Helped.
So people will ask, who do you think should start game 5 if they're both healthy and ready to go? Should it be DeSmith or should it be Seelofs? And my cowardly answer is I will defer to Ian Clark. And I will say that over and over again. But here's what I wonder. Okay? And we've had this conversation already. Is it possible that the Canucks look at this situation and go, okay, Demko's out, probably not coming back.
Okay.
Right? Probably not coming back.
I'm with you so far.
We're trying to win the cup here, not just one series. Who has the highest ceiling?
Sure.
On a goalie? Who has like, it's kind of like that Simpsons episode where, or was it Family Guy? Like it's like the mystery box, right? Yeah, it was a Family Guy,
sure.
Right? Like,
it could even be a boat.
Yeah, you take the boat, which would be DeSmith, or the mystery box, right? And the mystery box could be anything. Yeah, it could be a boat.
Yep.
It could be another DeSmith. But what if it's a Demko? We've seen these stories in the NHL in the past where, you know, relatively unknown goalies
sure.
go on crazy runs. And they're young. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the cases, they're really young and they're really inexperienced, like more inexperienced than Casey DeSmith.
Yeah.
I just wonder if they look at Seelovs and they think, if we're trying to win this thing, mm-hmm. does he give us a higher ceiling than Casey DeSmith gives us? Casey DeSmith might give us a higher floor, but there might be way more variance in the possibilities with Seelovs. That's what I wonder about it.
Laddie, what do you think?
Would the higher floor goaltender not be more appealing to you? Because the Canucks are a strong team. They don't need star goaltending to win games.
There's logic in that,
Would you
too.
Not go with the goalie that is more likely to give you a consistent effort rather than the guy who could be very possibly boom or
There's
bust?
Logic in that, too.
Not against Edmonton. Because okay. I think Edmonton is just like, I know they didn't have their best game last night in L.A., but look, I'm looking for. I think in the next series, if these are all big ifs, okay. Still, if the Canucks manage to get past Nashville, and if Edmonton puts away LA, which is less of an if, I think. Although they only got like 13 shots last night. Anyway,
franchise record fewest shots.
I just don't see them getting past the Oilers with DeSmith in net. And I just wonder if they might be tempted to just be like, you don't know this guy, you're getting him, and maybe there's that miracle story.
When you bring that up, the miracle story, I'll say this. There is something, and I know it sounds ridiculous to anyone that's based in logic and stats and scouting profiles. There is something in being like, maybe he goes on a heater. Maybe we just catch lightning in a bottle, and it doesn't make any sense.
I just don't think there's any goalie in the world that McDavid looks at and goes, I don't know.
I don't think that's ever going to happen. You can't look at it like that because you have to look at it. It's like we only have two choices, and one is the 32-year-old career backup who we kind of know and everyone kind of knows, and the other is just a wild card. Like you said, probably a lower floor. Like if it goes bad, it could go real bad. But if it goes good... And that's the decision that you're left with.
Seelovs looked so calm in net last night. Like, that's what really struck me. And not to say DeSmith hasn't at times as well, but he just looked like I was impressed immediately when the game started. Like, he looked so cool back there, so collected.
Was it because he had the ice bag on his head?
Yeah, that was part of it. And it worked during the game, too. It was just something about the way he was playing. I'm like, man, they got to start this guy next game. Like, he's going to get into his zone, and they're going
to
ride on it.
Well, we'll talk to Kevin Woodley about that coming up later in the show. But coming up next, it's going to be David Amber joining us to talk about last night's game. We're so thankful of David Amber that he took video of our watch party at the Hollywood Theater and put it on live on the Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. It was amazing. It was a great moment for the show. It was a great moment for all the fans that were there. They were at the watch party, and then they're like looking on TV. They're like, "Isn't that our watch party?"
Yeah.
Wait, am I
on the TV?
It was really awesome. So we'll talk to David Amber about that.
Did you like my panorama?
Yeah, it was good.
Yes, A-Dog. Yeah.
He was on his A-Dog chair.
By the way, that's A-Dog's note there that he wants. Yes, A-Dog took the video.
Give me all the credit.
A-Dog took the video.
Hey, by the way, do you want to hear an old man moment that I had on the winning goal?
Sure do.
Okay, so I took my camera out, and I'm like, I'm going to get some video here. And I'm like panning around, and I'm like, this is going to be amazing. I can't wait to post this. And then I even flipped the phone around and like had it on me, and I'm like cheering. And then I look at the phone, I was like, oh, it's on the photo setting.
Yeah. Such a boomer move.
Why is nobody moving?
Damn it, and why is the flashlight on? What's going on here? This is. I was very confused.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
I don't know. I can't make a prediction on what's going to happen in game five. I hope that the Preds are so distraught from whatever's happened in this series that they're just like, well, it's just not our series. Well, it's been a good season. You know, it's going to be crazy in Vancouver. We got no hope. And I hope at the same time that the Canucks are like, we need to be a lot better, and they can find, I don't know if it's a sense of urgency or it's maybe just doing things a little bit differently, a different game plan. Or maybe it just comes down to winning more battles and they put the Preds away. But I'm not quite like at the point of, all right, let's prepare for the Oilers here, because one win for the Preds in Vancouver, and all of a sudden, we're the ones doing the uh-oh.
Well, here's a few things to consider. Trying to predict this series is a near impossible task. You'll remember, it wasn't that long ago, the Canucks started this series in one game one with Thatcher Demko as their goalie. And that narrative has changed not once, but twice in terms of who the starting goalie has been. So that's a huge thing. In a vacuum, that would have been the biggest story, is that your Vezina caliber goalie gets hurt, might be done for a long time, and you're left to turn it to the backup, but then he gets hurt. And by the way, Rick Tocchet did confirm post-game yesterday that it is an injury that Casey DeSmith is dealing with, because there was some thought that he might have had the flu. Tocchet said he's injured, and they made the call on Saturday, because Tocchet said, we needed to let Silovs know that he was going, not last minute.
Like, yeah.
By the way, Artie,
have a good sleep.
Take off that.
You're playing tomorrow.
Take off your ice hat and go into the game. They needed to get that sorted. So now they're down to the third string goalie. So there's something very unpredictable. Second part of this is that this series now has been defined by sort of flash moments from the Canucks. In game one, it was the 12 seconds, right? Two goals, 12 seconds apart. And game four, it was two goals in the final 3 minutes and then one in the first minute of overtime. So there's been, and it's really impossible to try and predict when the next flash moment is going to happen, because they happen in a flash. That's
right.
Kind of
the
whole point of the thing, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what to expect. The only thing that's kind of held consistent is that the home team really seems to have had some energy and some juice, and at times has been the dominant team. Like, the Canucks were the dominant team in game two in terms of shot metrics and just piling it on the Preds. Preds were very opportunistic. They found a way to block a lot of shots, and they were timely goals. We haven't talked at all about game three, the Friday game that the Canucks won, because, you know, Sunday's game kind of takes precedence, but it was the exact opposite. You saw the Preds come out with that expected energy you would have being the home team, having the crowd behind you. And that's, so I'm kind of thinking they come back to Vancouver and all the things you were talking about might hold serve. Like, the Canucks might come back and get another lift from the Rogers Arena crowd, and they're back home, and they'll be all the, you know, last change, all the sort of typical things.
Well, laid it off of that win, too. And the reverse, the Preds completely crushed off of the loss.
But I can't predict any of that. I wouldn't feel comfortable saying that anything we've seen will hold serve and moving forward.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because it's been such a bizarre series. Yeah. It's the most bizarre series out of all of them, I'll be dead honest.
Okay, we got an open segment on the other side, so let's move on from, you know, stories about how you watch the game into what you're looking for Game 5 tomorrow. I know Tocchet is hoping for more from, all he'll say is, some guys. And he said, we've got to get some guys in the fight. Hopefully this win will bring some juice to some guys. Who could he be talking about?
No idea. Not a clue.
Thatcher Demko.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He needs to try harder.
Yeah.
Definitely needs to try harder.
I actually feel bad about bringing this up, because, like, I know there's someone getting into their car right now or listening live, and, like, he's going to be, he or she's going to be sitting there going, like, oh, I'm going to tune into the Halford and Brough show. I bet they're going to be super enthusiastic about the game and talk about, like, how great it was. And we have done that for, what, an hour, almost an hour and a half.
90 minutes.
So do we need to talk about Petey?
Yeah. Well, first off, any listener that would complain about where we're going with this should look at the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket, because it is loaded with questions asking where EP40 is, what's gone wrong, what's happening.
Unfortunately, remember on Friday, I predicted that Game 3 was going to be Petey's big breakout. Well, that didn't happen. And my justification for it was Game 2 was a nightmare for Petey, but at least he was involved in the play. At least he had the puck a lot. The puck was on his stick. He was trying to make things happen out there. Things just weren't going well for him. So I thought, okay, well, maybe that in a weird sense is progress. After watching Petey in games 3 and 4, I have come to the conclusion, and hopefully it's a wrong one, but this is my conclusion. I just don't think you can count on much from Petey. You can be hopeful, for sure. And Rick Tocchet is saying, I hope The win will bring some juice to some guys. You can be hopeful. Let's all be hopeful. But if I'm Tockett, this is a clever wordplay I've got here. I'm not robbing Peter to pay Petey. Which is to say, I'm not going to rejig my lines to help Petey. I mean, I did that a lot down the stretch. I gave him Garland for a bit. I gave him Besser for a bit. Didn't really work. I'm not giving him Garland and Joshua. I'm giving the best line mates to the guys who are delivering. I'm keeping Lindholm with Garland and Joshua. You know, the guys that teamed up to score the game-winning goal in overtime yesterday? Mm-hmm. I'm keeping Miller, Besser, and Suter together. I think Suter's been better than Pettersson. If anything, I'm giving Lindholm some time with Besser and Miller if I'm going to sub out Suter. I'm not putting the Lotto line back together. I'm going to give Lindholm that time. Now, here's the big issue. Can the Canucks win the cup if Pettersson keeps playing like this? Well, probably not. But right now, if I'm Rick Tockett, I'm worried about eliminating the Predators and getting through this series. And then you worry about the next series. And if I'm Tockett, I'm not making Pettersson a major focus in Game 5 because Petey's been so bad. And he's been given chance after chance after chance. This is his redemption game. No, this is his redemption game. Oh, maybe this is his redemption game. Mm-hmm. Maybe after the contract is signed, he'll get better. Maybe blah, 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 right? None of the blahs have worked.
Yep.
Question. So, could we get his parents to yell at him? They are there.
I don't know what's going on. But I think I'm leaning more towards you're going to have to – you being the collective royal, you are going to have to move past like trying to figure out what's wrong and just accept it that it's not working. And you're still in the middle of the playoffs.
Could they put him with Garland and Joshua?
You could do anything.
Just said that you I wouldn't do that because do you know who that's unfair to? Lindholm.
Yeah. But, just for a few shifts, just to get him going, see what happens.
Give it a whirl. You are Charlie Brown kicking this the football. He's tried it. Tockett has tried the Lotto line back together. No, it hasn't worked.
No, Garland and Joshua. He hasn't tried that yet.
Okay.
Why not?
Maybe that's the answer.
Oh, maybe it's, I'm not saying it's
A-Dog,
the answer, but why not try
A-Dog,
it?
A-Dog, are you watching him play?
I know. He's not playing.
Are you watching him play?
Yes, he's not playing.
Has he won a battle?
He has not won any battles. But maybe Garland and Joshua come in the battles and get him the puck.
Maybe it'll work. For us.
Yeah. Yes. I'm just saying, just give it a whirl.
I don't know, man.
What if it does work? Then I'll look like a genius, right, bruv? So maybe just give it a whirl.
All right. I want to hear from the listeners. You know my opinion. You know A-Dog over here,
optimistic A-Dog.
A-Dog's going to get a lot of calls from people with some great investment ideas. This time, it might work.
I just met this Nigerian prince. He seems on the level.
This one, I believe. The other guys, they definitely screwed me in the end. Yeah. But this guy, there's something about him. There's something about him.
Kevin Woodley joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Kev, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, so I'll deliver the news. What perfect timing. The NHL has just announced its three finalists for the Vezina Trophy, awarded to the goaltender adjudged to be the best at his position. The three finalists this year are Sergei Bobrovsky of the Florida Panthers, Connor Hellebuck of the Winnipeg Jets, and Vancouver Canucks, everybody. The injured goalie is a Vezina finalist. So with Kev, we go to Kev now. Kev, welcome to the show. There's your news for the morning.
Yeah, I knew it was being announced today. I didn't know at what time, and I didn't know who the third finalist was. But anytime you got a guy who's 17th in the league in goals saved above expected and 24th in adjusted save percentage, you got to make him a third Vezina finalist. So congratulations to Sergei Bobrovsky. My God.
Shade hath been thrown.
Wins, baby, wins.
That's what the GMs vote for. It's all about the wins. Maybe a little raw save percentage. Never mind the fact his is one of the highest expected in the entire league. But, hey, no question, we saw the save in round one. We saw what he did in the playoffs last year. He's an incredible goaltender. And this is sort of the resume that GMs tend to prefer. In terms of, you know, who actually had the best seasons, Hellebuck fully deserving to be up there. Ironically, despite having a playoff that is the polar opposite of Sergei Bobrovsky. Thatcher Demko was third in goals saved above expected. Connor Hellebuck was second. And Jordan Binnington actually finished first in the National Hockey League in goals saved above expected. I won't run down the list of the other 16 guys who were better than Sergei Bobrovsky on a per-shot basis this year, but hey, it is what it is. Like, it's not a criticism of Bobrovsky. It's just that, like, even the guy we're watching in Nashville right now, UC Saros, him not being a finalist last year was absurd. Absurd when you dug into the numbers. But, hey, GM's going to GM.
Hellebuck's winning this thing anyway, though, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, maybe votes were cast after the first round. You might get a different result. But, yeah, he and deservedly so. Like I said, he may have finished second in goals saved above expected. But some of the metrics in close games were just, like, insane. Like, most of his work was done tied or up a goal. Never had the margins. A victory, sort of that margin of error that even Thatcher Demko had during his first half when the Canucks were scoring all those goals. Tough break for Demko was the timing of the injury, because when we remember those three games he had leading in, he was starting, like, he looked like a guy who was right back on top of his game. And if you look at how Hellebuck faded down the stretch, there was absolutely an opportunity for this to be Thatcher Demko's year, but is what it is. He'll finish second.
Okay, let's go right to I did want to ask about Hellebuck, but we got to get to the Canucks story is so, like, it's unbelievable. And the fact that this isn't, you know, somehow caused an implosion and that they're up 3-1, having used three goalies through four games, is remarkable. Testament to a lot of different things. But I want to ask you what you thought of Seelov's performance yesterday, because we played the audio from Rick Tocchet and to Rick, but it probably wasn't his major focus. His takeaway was he looked calm in there. So I was like, okay, let's get something a little deeper. Let's ask Kev.
Did he look big in there?
Did he look big? That's a big question. Mm-hmm. Kev,
he moved well. He moved very well.
Seemed to move well.
Kev, feel free to fill in the gaps here. How did Arturs Seelovs look to you yesterday?
He looked calm in there.
Big.
Big and honestly, calm. Though, like, that's
like
one of
Magoli's.
The
big and calm.
That's one of the things that's kind of been missing this year. A little overactivity. Chasing play, too aggressive. We saw it at times, I thought, even during his four-game run at the end of the regular season. Like, to me, the best thing you can say, like I mean this in a positive way, is, like, that to me, that was his best performance of the five he's played this year. And it came on the road with the pressure that was attached to it. I thought that was easily his best game. He looked in control of his game. You know, a little positionally aggressive that leads to the gap between him and the post that the puck gets through and off of Forsberg's skate for the third goal. But that's just how he's playing things, especially off the rush. Like, he's going to take ice and trust that the guys aren't going to let pucks get through to the back door. And, you know, like, is it exploitable with passes? Maybe less so compared to other goaltenders because he is pretty quick. But he's managing those decisions in terms of when to take ice and when to maybe back off a little bit really well. When pucks went behind the net, he was in control in his post play, going side to side and sort of into his reverse track, one side to the other and back. And that's, you know, there were times and there were goals that resulted in it where that was way more frantic. And even in the regular season when he was up here, and there were times in the American League where, you know, forget frantic, it just looked completely out of control. So, you know, calm is actually a fair description. It was the most in control I've seen him up here, and given the stakes, you know, that's saying something. We can look at the technical game, we can look at the tactical game, we can evaluate how they're managing both of those, but you rarely get a glimpse in between the ears. We can see what happens between the pipes, but not between the ears. And I thought last night was a real glimpse into, you know, the way this kid's put together mentally and one of the strengths of why they think he's got NHL upside long term.
So you're making the call. You're Rick Tocchet. Game five. Let's say Casey DeSmith is 100%. He's ready to go. There's nothing that should make you feel worried that he's going to suffer a worse injury if he plays. He's 100%. You've got a decision between him and Seelovs. Who do you go with?
I'd probably still go back to Casey. And that's no disrespect. It's just, you know, because Arturs showed you he could handle it. But, you know, I could make an argument, not that you don't in any way blame the first goal on Arturs, but, you know, Casey doesn't have the... It's a floor-ceiling thing, right? Like, he's got a higher floor. And Arturs probably has a higher ceiling. And there are some, there were some elements even in the goals where, you know, is Casey in those situations taking away the perimeters of the net? Maybe not as well. But are pucks going through him? Probably not. Casey played really well in Nashville in Game 3. And so, you know, if healthy, if 100%, if we're at the point where there's no risk of re-injury, which obviously is an issue right now given the status of your number one goaltender, then yeah, I my hunch is they would go back to Casey DeSmith.
What did you think about the Canucks as a whole? You know, are you... I guess what's on your mind heading into Game 5? Like, because you can go with two options here. Either you can be super optimistic that the Canucks have found a way to get a 3-1 series lead and we still haven't seen really their best. Or you can say that, you know, if the Preds go in to Game 5 and win at Rogers Arena, then all of a sudden all the Canucks fans in Vancouver might be like, oh boy, this thing could still go pear-shaped.
Yeah, you know, like, I think you look at, it's a bit of both, right? Like, you have to look at a bit of both. And this is the thing about this team. They'll evaluate it honestly. Not just talk it, but I think the players will be honest with themselves. You know, last night, Preds had 10 high-danger chances. Vancouver ended up with 6. They were all towards the end, right? Like outside of the first goal on the first shot, and then the extra net goals in the overtime goal, like, that's all of them, right? Now, they converted 4-6, so that's great. But when you go through the rest of, like, first shot to final 3 minutes with 2 high-danger chances, like, again, not good. Overall on the series, though, like, last night was the first night where the Preds sort of got theirs and created a lot of chances. On the series, it's actually quite even. Like, it's almost like there's nothing happening out there. Like, the Preds have 10 expected goals and the Canucks have 9 for the series, 4 games in. And so their ability to sort of handle the Predators through the neutral zone last night was a bit worrisome. Their inability to get to the front of the net or generate anything offensively themselves was a bit worrisome. Like, these are all, you know, things that I'm sure they're trying to and talking about addressing. And your fear is, because of the way the last two went, because it was sort of a lot of Casey DeSmith in Game 3 and just, like, one of the craziest comebacks anyone's ever seen in Game 4, the margins aren't there, right? Yeah, you're up 3-1 in the series, but it could tilt the other way pretty quick. And at the end of the day, you just don't want to go back to Nashville. I'm sure the media, well, maybe not. It's a long flight.
That's a long flight.
The fans, including a friend of mine who was there for Game 3 and 4 and found himself on the television quite prominently in that package leading up to overtime, they might want to go back. But if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you have designs on getting guys rested and healthy and ready for a round 2, probably almost certainly against the Edmonton Oilers, you do not want to go back to Nashville. So you've got to figure a few of these things out. There's positives, though, right? The power play's clicking, what they did with the extra man, the set face-off play. Like, there's positives there, but it doesn't go through the lineup enough that you can feel great about, on balance, about how the last two games have gone.
We're speaking to Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Kev is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. Kev, if you're UC Saros right now, are you happy with the way that you've played in this series? Are you disappointed? Or have you just not had enough action because the Canucks have only put 71 shots on you through 4 games?
Well, I mean, listen, like we've talked about this before. Don't discount how tough it is. Like, in some ways, last night was probably better for Arturs because he was busier. Like, one of the challenges he had in those 4 games he played down the stretch of the regular season is there were some really low-shot nights, right? Like, at least the Preds kept him engaged in that game. There's no chance for your mind to sort of wander to bigger picture things and, you know, start looking ahead to the future and stuff like that. And there's probably a little bit the other way. Like, not a lot of shots is not easy for goalies, but if I'm UC Saros and I've given up on 11 and on unexpected 9, and I'm scrambling as much as I am in my crease and find myself diving head first at as many pucks as he did, you know, last night. And hey, some of those for sure, the Besser first one on the opener, that's just a hell of a play. And sometimes you have to tip your hat, but certainly there's been a lot of activity in his crease where, you know, the goalie we know for sort of holding edges and pushing across and staying over his knees has ended up on his belly, reaching sticks and diving. And, you know, I don't know that that's necessary. Like, I don't think that UC Saros himself would describe that as his best game or what he looks like when he's on top of his game. And there's been a lot of that in this series.
I guess the Oilers must be feeling pretty good about Stuart Skinner right now.
They should be. They should be. If I'm the Kings, I might be feeling... we talk about the adjusted numbers, and David Riddick had the fifth highest adjusted save percentage in the league this year, and I know he didn't play much, and I know nobody sees him as a number one, but I thought we might have seen him sooner in that series. Now, I know it didn't do them any good, because they couldn't score at the other end. They were, you talk about teams being content with outside shots and little quality, that was the Kings last night. But if they made that move early in the series, maybe they're not giving up 18 and not, or, you know, over the first three games. Listen, this is like Skinner's perfectly capable of this. If you don't allow it to turn into a track meet, his one weakness, and it was why he was near the bottom of the league when they were dead last in the league themselves at giving up rush chances. And even after the coaching change, when they cleaned up all the rush chances against, his numbers were still underwater on the ones they did give up. So it's all about, for the Edmonton Oilers, if they want the best of Stuart Skinner and they want to give him a chance to be as good as he was last night, just don't give up rush chances. And, I mean, to a certain degree, you're always going to give up a little. But they started trading them a little bit in that series. Maybe because they thought it was going to be too easy after game one, and maybe in a lot of ways it has been too easy. Like, they kind of feel like they can just put their foot on the gas at any point. But if you're going to get into a track meet, that's not the goal. Like, it sounds like a slight, and I'm worried about that, and it's not, because it's not intended. It's just, it's playing away from his biggest strengths and towards his biggest weakness. And there were times I was shocked to see it, frankly, in the first few games against the Kings where they got into that style of game, because they should know better by now. Frankly, some of their performances at the beginning of that series, the word I would use, because it's a word Quinn Hughes has used in the opposite direction for the Canucks, it was immature. They had some immature performances where they just didn't bother to defend and gave up the kind of chances that, you know, make their goaltender look bad. And last night they didn't, and guess what? He looked fine.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.